Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Yeah, so my background is sociology and specifically statistics. And what I learned from teaching statistics is that there's some major flaws with the way mathematics is applied to modern science, specifically this feeling like it's okay to ignore outliers. I was always concerned about this from the beginning of graduate school, that the modern sense of science's use of statistics was to find averages. Well, we know very well that sometimes it's not the averages that are important. Even if they exist, it's not even proven that averages are real. It's a mathematical fiction that is useful in many circumstances. I mean, like your car gets like an average miles a gallon. Certain systems, mechanical systems, have those averages, but that's not the way life always works. Sometimes it's the outliers that really matter. And so when I started coming across some of these topics, first one was remote viewing, which we've talked about before, I believe. And that led me to this thing called crop circles, with none of which I knew anything about when I was in graduate school. But I thought, as an open-minded person, I should look at remote viewing, this idea that people have an ability to perceive non-local information, you know, what we call psychic ability, you know, just in an open-minded, honest way. I found that there was a lot of evidence for RV and various types of psychic functioning, which I never knew about until I got out of graduate school. And I learned that there's a type of bias within academics to focus on mainstream topics and not look at the outliers. And this has persisted through all of the different topics that I've looked at. I wrote about remote viewing and sort of the resonance of RV and sort of the resonance of crop circles in my first book, Opening Minds, A Journey of Extraordinary Encounters, Crop Circles, and Resonance. And these topics have a way of connecting to each other. You know, even if our minds want them to be like separate, categorized, you know, hermetically sealed topics, the way science likes to do things, they're actually interconnected. And that's how the topic of cryptids came up. I first heard about this reading a book about remote viewing, about Uri Geller being tested at SRI in Palo Alto in the 70s for the government remote viewing program, which you know, and your listeners are familiar with, that there were cryptids seen by some of the scientists at Lawrence Livermore Lab when he was around. Cryptids.
Tell us. I haven't heard.
So cryptids are very, you know, by just in a strict sense, cryptids are very rare. You know, crypt means like something from a tomb or something kind of rare and hidden. Cryptids are animals that are, you know, rare animals that might, you know, just have a normal physical existence, but they're just not very common. Kind of like black swans were before explorers went to Australia. European explorers thought there were only white swans until they visited Australia and found the black swans, you know. So we have this idea of black swans being rare events. My other book being Black Swan Ghosts, which we'll talk about another time. I'm just revising it to release it soon in a couple of weeks, a new edition of that. So black swan, the idea of black swan events is rare events, and rare animals are called cryptids. And but it's not just ordinary animals, Kim. It's animals and creatures that we don't even have names for. Things that people really experience that completely defy any sense of ordinary reality, the way you and I were taught about it in school. Around Uri Geller, one of the scientists and his wife allegedly saw some very large bird at the foot of their bed inside their home, you know, one morning. When Uri Geller happened to be, you know, at the lab, this person was working with Uri Geller, and they had no idea what they were looking at. There were also small UFOs and things like that seen around Yuri. And Yuri's abilities apparently come from contact with an orb, a ball of light, in his apartment complex when he was a young kid in Israel, which was actually witnessed by a neighbor who came forward and said they saw Yuri running away from this orb and it caught up with him. And I think he went unconscious for a few minutes. And when he came to, he had these sorts of powers that he hadn't had before, you know, psychic abilities, which really makes sense if we look at the science of what's going on behind ball lightning and paranormal phenomena and so forth. So that was the first time I ever heard about strange animals, was in this book called Remote Viewers by Jim Schnabel about the government remote viewing program. And there, cryptids, it didn't come from, you know, adventurous explorers out in the woods looking for Bigfoot. It came from scientists at Lawrence Livermore Lab. So that's when I first came across the topic. Now, it turns out that once I started teaching my remote viewing at my remote viewing institute here in Boulder, Colorado, I taught a lot of people who were native to Colorado, and a number of them told me about their Bigfoot encounters that they had had over the years. And I got to tell you, Kim, I had no place in my mind to fit how their experiences fit in with what I was studying remote viewing, other than that they seemed to be interested in both topics. And it took quite a while for me to realize the importance of this because, we were all told ever since the Patterson-Gimlin film of 1967, that famous 300-frame, 16-millimeter film taken by Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin from Yakima, who had gone down to the Bluff Creek area just out of curiosity. They were two cowboys from Yakima, Washington in the 60s, and they took that famous film that's called the Patterson-Gimlin film footage, which I'm sure you've seen. A lot of us had the idea this was some sort of rare North American wood ape, right? That this was just some relic of another time when there were primates in North America. Even on late night talk shows, you would have experts, like on the Art Bell Show, for example, you would have experts come on and they would say, this is just a very rare relic primate. And I know some physical anthropologists still believe this. I don't believe it anymore, but that's what I believed at the time. So when my students from my Mount Baldy Institute said, you know, I saw this huge hairy bipedal creature walking in the woods, or, you know, one of the guys in my class was pulled out of his tent as a teenager camping up not far from here, up by Nederland, just on his like solo overnight camping trip, something unzipped the tent and pulled him out. I mean, really fast, like at jet speeds. He had no idea what this could be. He's a huge guy. And I heard stories like this and I just thought, I don't know, maybe they're in the Rocky Mountains, right? But here's what happened. The more people I talked to and the more research I did into this topic, it seemed to be anything but a relic primate. It seemed to be much more like, you know, something on the human family tree and not a gorilla or anything like that. And 100 years ago or so, you know, people experienced Bigfoot, what we call Bigfoot now. That name originated in 57. From Jerry Crew doing a construction project out at the Bluff Creek area where the Patterson-Gimlin film was taken.
Are you talking about it came out of looking at the footprints around some of the equipment that they had?
Yeah, they saw the footprints and then they had some of the huge 100-gallon oil drums thrown, which are very heavy, you know, and vandalism that can only be done by something really strong. And they saw the footprints around. And they were a little ticked off. They thought maybe it's a hoax or something. But as time went on, they realized there was really something large out there and it had big feet. So it ended up being called Bigfoot. But Native Americans have names, you know, hundreds of names for Bigfoot in Native American traditions. And settlers out west used to call it an escaped gorillas. They didn't know what they were dealing with. They called it an escaped gorilla. Wild Men, Mountain Devils. They had different names for it. And in 57, we picked up this name, Bigfoot. And what I realized from talking to the witnesses in Colorado, going to conferences, is there were paranormal aspects to this creature that didn't fit the idea of any sort of gorilla or monkey or primate, even if it had an ape, has an ape-like appearance.
So tell us what before you go further.
Yeah, so people right from the get-go, when I went to some of the conferences from the Sasquatch Outpost in Bailey, Colorado. You know, you heard stories of them going invisible right in front of people. And these were from long-term researchers, Kim. These weren't from people just starting out. These were people who've been doing it, like Igor Burtsev from Russia, who'd been studying Bigfoot for 50 years, like half a century. And he said they went through the same mental processes that many of us did. You know, it's some sort of gorilla relative. And then they realized, but it can speak human languages to some degree, very intelligent, bipedal, likes to swim, things that apes don't do. So maybe it's a rare human, like something on the family tree that just is a leftover from another, you know, before the ice ages. But then they realized, you know, the invisibility, the orbs, the weird electromagnetic effects when it's around, space-time distortions, presence around UFOs and other phenomena like that. And basically the behavior when people would observe them or interact with them was just far too intelligent to be anything ape-like, especially since they like water a lot and apes generally don't.
Stop right there. You said so much. Okay, I got to bring you back because if I don't, we're going to get way far ahead. I had no idea. I listened to a lot of, you know, historical research about remote viewing, right, things like that. I haven't heard them say anything about actually picking up on this creature during some of those sessions. So can you tell us, like, what did they say that they saw exactly during some of those early remote viewing sessions
were not about Bigfoot. And it wasn't
something. Right, but they picked up on it during those sessions.
These are people who actually had physical encounters.
Wow.
I will tell you one of these, and this is something, you know, people who study these topics like we do here, like I know you do and I do, you're like, what do you do with some of this? Stanton Friedman, the UFO researcher, called it his gray box. You know, you put some of these things in your gray box because you don't know where to file it away in your mind. One of the women that I, native Coloradan here, had a telepathic experience in her Colorado Springs area home with a couple other women who she was sharing the house with at the time. There were three or four women living in the house, and she was upstairs just going to sleep, and she heard this scream, howling, you know, the howl, growl, scream. And simultaneously in her mind, she saw the face of a Bigfoot with reddish hair right in her mind's eye. She runs down the stairs, and the friend who had been in the kitchen had seen it right through the French doors, and it had gone by the time Barbara got downstairs. But it was exactly what she had seen in her mind's eye. So this is, Kim, this is kind of typical of many encounters, is a telepathic component. We just don't normally associate this with ordinary mammals. Literally projecting thoughts into your mind, or getting on the same frequency so your mind is generating images related to Bigfoot, or even hearing voices in your mind, voices talking to you that you know are the Bigfoot in the area before you see them. I've heard this many, many times. And it's in this recent movie, A Flash of Beauty, Paranormal Bigfoot, which I'm featured in for a stretch talking about the science behind this. People can see that on streaming services. There are people there who talk about that. It's called mind speak. And, you know, the first time I heard this, if it's just one witness here or there, it's like you're not sure if it's a phenomena or if it's just that particular person's experience. But now that I've read hundreds of encounters, talked to many people, been to many conferences, the mind speak is a big component of it, Kim. And that is just not explainable by any ordinary animal characteristics that we're familiar with.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel.
Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
And let me just tell you this, and I don't want to interrupt your flow. I'm K-Town. I'm actually the host.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Cool. It's cool. You're good. I know. People do it all the time. Yes. All right. This is really good. You're doing great. All right. Let me ask you something, Simeon. You said that people believe like this is some type of ape or whatever. You said you don't believe that that's what it actually is. So what I'm going to ask you, what do you think it is?
Let me give you a brief story and then I'll tell you what I think it is. I was at a conference over in Forks, Washington about a year ago, and there was a Native American there from the Spokane tribe, and he said that his grandfather used to trade with Bigfoot. And I went up to him as recently as 1913, about 100 years ago, 110 years ago. I asked him, well, you know, I went up, what did they trade? He goes, you know, my grandfather was a salmon fisherman, and the Bigfoot would bring medicinal herbs from deep from the forest, and they would trade every year. So, you know, the last I checked, you don't have monkeys and gorillas trading the way humans do. A lot of the tribes in the Northwest traded with Bigfoot, just like this fellow Neil said that his grandfather did. You know, the Quinault and several other, Makah, several other tribes out there, Lummi. So you had a lot of tribes that said they traded with it. So to me, that suggests it's a type of very ancient human with abilities that are, you know, way beyond what human abilities are, what we would call, I guess, paranormal for lack of a better word. So it's a paranormal type of human, a human that can go invisible in front of you. I've spoken to witnesses who've told me they've seen this right in front of their eyes, that can do mind speak, that's capable of incredible speed when they want to, and shape-shifting. The ability to transform into trees, tree stumps, things like that when they want to. So it seems to me like a type of human, given that they converse with people. I've talked to people that have gotten to know them, who grew up around them in their areas. They're something related to us in some way, but much older. Much older. And in those hundreds of thousands of years or millions of years of evolution, however long it is, they developed what we call paranormal abilities. Like we take classes to learn remote viewing. They already seem to know how to do that and a lot of other things. And you get that connection to orbs. They're seen around orbs. They generate orbs. They come out of orbs. It's in the Flash of Beauty, Paranormal Bigfoot. There's witnesses who describe this very concretely, two witnesses who saw this transformation from orbs, Bigfoot to orbs. They seem to be shapeshifters that can change their form and convert into pure energy. As challenging as that is to believe a human could do that, they can do this and even seemingly change into other animal shapes. So it's hard to know exactly what they are. They do have this. Some of them have this ape human-like appearance, but appearance is just skin deep. It's not really what they are down deep. They have a lot of evolution. They're closer to nature than we are. They can use nature's energy and properties in ways that we forgot maybe how to do.
You know what? And when you say mind speak, you're talking about telepathy, mm-hmm. correct? Okay, I just want people to know what that is. Also, let me ask you some. Okay, in your book, you talk about a map. You said it's one of the Bigfoot encounter maps created by. Tell me about that map. And where can we see that?
I learned about this map, K-Town, on the first Flash of Beauty film, which is called A Flash of Beauty Bigfoot Revealed. And they had these cartographers who had worked for the government on this first film. I watched that film just as I was writing Dark Matter Monsters. So I was still learning about the topic back then. And this cartographer said they took the BFRO, Bigfoot Research Organization, sightings on the BFRO.net website and just mapped them out. And it's called the Bigfoot Mapping Project. Bigfoot Mapping Project, I believe, .org. People can look it up.
Okay.
You can go in your neighborhood and see where the closest sightings were. They're all over the United States. And, oh, that's another thing, K-Town. I originally thought, like we had heard, this was some sort of rare primate in the mountains, maybe the Northwest, you know, Cascades. There may be 1,000 of them in the Cascades, and that was it. Well, you look at that Bigfoot mapping project, they're everywhere, including Delaware, Little Delaware. I'm from the East Coast. Some of these states aren't really huge. Connecticut, Rhode Island, they're seen out there. They're seen on Long Island. They're seen close to, they're not just some forest dweller. They're seen close to urban areas. They're extremely good at concealing themselves. They can't really be detected by ordinary means if they don't want to be. So there, if you look at that map, the Bigfoot Mapping Project map online, it's still online. You will see they're all over the United States, even in desert areas. So that completely shatters this idea that they're related to any sort of ordinary mammal that would have a region. You know, like wolverines, for example, are prefer mountainous boreal forests and so forth. And they stick to the western states, you know, for the most part. And they like the Rocky Mountains and go up into Canada. I mean, most mammals that we know about have a region and they stick to these areas. Birds, you know, you look at bird migrations and birds are distributed in certain areas. Not so with Bigfoot. They are all over the place. And K-Town, they come into towns. They actually come into small towns.
Where neighborhoods are and things like that.
Yeah, they come in there sometimes. People don't know what they're looking at. You know, I've heard cases of it happening out here in Colorado. They just get curious, walk right into town. Usually, you know, at night, people see them, and they could be anywhere pretty much except I would say a major metropolis area. Based on my research, they come into suburbs sometime. I've looked for evidence of them in the Bronx. I haven't seen them in the Bronx since I'm from the New York area or Manhattan. Okay. But they are right outside in the suburbs, Long Island, Westchester County, New Jersey. You hear about these encounters. Now, I got to say something important about this. The reason we don't know more about this incredible topic is people are reluctant to talk about it because they're afraid of the stigma that goes along with being associated with these phenomena. And that is a big impediment to people talking about it, because I guarantee you there's a lot more sightings of Bigfoot and other types of creatures related to Bigfoot.
There's more unreported than reported. Yeah,
I would say by a long shot. It's a type of topic that people still to this day, and I'm hoping in my lifetime will overcome this. There's a fear of looking weird to neighbors and friends and family by being associated with topics that are considered woo-woo, you know, to use the vernacular.
Let me ask you this. And you are exactly right. There's a stigma on it. No one wants to be seen as crazy or whatever.
Exactly.
It doesn't help at all. Let me ask you this. Let me get your thoughts and theories about why most sightings are of one individual and not a group of them.
Well, people do see groups. No, they do see them in groups, and they come across families of them. People see them in national parks, and they can group together in quite a large group. They have been known to scare backpackers out of Yellowstone and Glacier and places like this. And they tend to travel in pairs. You may only see one, but the other one is around right outside your visual range. They're pretty good at recon. And this is why they're usually one step ahead of humans. And I should say, sometimes they ask for help from humans. There are cases where, you know, a mother Bigfoot has gone up to campers showing them an infant or a child with an injury, asking for help or something like that. And the people sort of figured out what was going on. So they will make contact with people. And it's called habituation. People will get to know them in their neighborhoods where they grew up. But I have found in talking to people in different Western states, they're somewhat reluctant to talk about these local Bigfoot because it feels special to them to have a relationship with them. maybe a gifting relationship where they leave apples or peanut butter or something for the Bigfoot, and then the Bigfoot will leave other things for them, like crystals or interesting stones and things like that. There are even cases of them leaving very helpful objects around just when you needed it. I know someone, Julie from Alabama, that has told me this story many times where she had a plumbing emergency. She needed a certain type of wrench, didn't have it. She had a Bigfoot sighting a couple of years before in Indiana where she grew up. And she went out in a very rural area in the forest, went out right in the middle of a driveway, was the perfect plumber's wrench. Like someone had been overwatching what she was doing. And that's the feeling people get. So if you have a good relationship with them, they can be sort of in the background all the time, but occasionally helpful. It's very complex and very interesting, but people don't talk about it a lot. I've asked people to tell me more about what they've experienced, and they'll tell me, but they don't want to put it into a book or go public with it. They just feel like it's sort of a special thing that they want to keep secret. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. And let me ask you this, before I lose my train of thought here. Is there any written Native American accounts of these creatures like living on their land? I'll be interested to know. Tell me what they are saying about it.
There are hundreds of names for Sasquatch. Sasquatch itself is a Native American name. It might be a mistranslation, an English sort of translation of a northwest coastal Native American name. But yeah, no, they all have extensive, some of them call them the ancient ones. They all say that they were here in North America before they got here, you know, crossing over the Bering Straits. That could have been 15,000 or 20,000 years ago when Native Americans first started coming across the Bering Straits. And they said the Sasquatch were already here. So they're indigenous, as far as we know, to North America. We're the visitors, you know, it's really sort of their place in some ways. And they must have had to adapt to have humans around. Yeah, so they had different relationships with the Native Americans. Some of them saw them as forest protectors and people, you know, like another tribe. People have told me they were like another tribe, distant Native American tribe, but another tribe nonetheless. And they had respect for them and felt like, you know, if you left them alone, they'd pretty much leave you alone. There are other accounts from other tribes where they felt like the Sasquatch might abduct children occasionally. And sometimes I've heard stories where they just would bring them back a week later. They're just kind of curious. And at another extreme, there were, you know, like warfare between some of these tribes and the Sasquatch. And some of them considered the Sasquatch hostile. So there's a huge range of relationships, just like you might have with people.
And see, that's my next question. I was going to ask you, have they been connected with the disappearance of any people historically? You said children, but I haven't heard anything officially.
I think so. Okay. I'm not saying that most of them do this, but it does seem that some of those disappearances, to me, and this is just my opinion, I can't prove this, it seems to me some of those disappearances happen in areas where there have been Sasquatch sightings. I've read accounts of park rangers in backcountry of Glacier and Yellowstone having very hostile encounters with these Sasquatch, having to run away. I mean, for a couple of days to get back to civilization away from them. Some of them didn't want to have anything to do with humans and had gotten used to being in the backcountry back there. So some of the encounters, I interviewed a radio talk show host, Gary Anderson. It's on my YouTube channel, by the way. And he gave me the first interview he ever did about this. He told me about it, but agreed to go on air. I mean, he had what seemed to him a very hostile encounter up in BC with a friend just taking photos in a natural area. I mean, and it did damage to his car. I mean, he had $5,000 worth of damage. The Sasquatch, you know, didn't want them there. It chased them out and then threw a huge log at their car or rock or something. And he really felt he wouldn't have survived if he hadn't gotten out of there. And that's what people say. Some people argue, well, they're just trying to scare you. I just, having talked to people like Gary, I think occasionally there are some that are pretty hostile and you should just leave as soon as you can, if not sooner, right? Maybe you shouldn't have been out there. It's very complex. I think our minds, K-Town, want this to be simple. We want them to be nice forest giants or something like that. It's just more complex than that. There are many helpful cases where they rescue children from having fallen in streams, put cars back on the road, give people food who are injured out in natural areas, who have, you know, capsized their kayak or something, are in a state of shock from the cold. I mean, there are many cases I know about where they rescue people.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
And there are occasionally cases when they're hostile too. And I think some of it, I wouldn't be surprised if they occasionally abduct people and never bring them back. As hard as that is to say, I think it's true.
Tell me about the, okay, so we know about the Patterson-Gimlin film, but surely that isn't the only one, only, you know.
No.
Tell me about something else.
There is an excellent film from the 90s from a forest worker named Paul Freeman, who worked in the Walla Walla area. Washington State, Walla Walla, Watershed, Uncompahgre National Forest in that corner of Oregon, who saw the footprints, did a lot of research. And if you go online and just look for Paul Freeman Bigfoot footage, he had one of those old Hi-8 cameras that we used to have. Maybe it was just 8mm. Maybe it was before. It was like VHS quality. And he took an excellent few seconds of one crossing his path right as he's looking at the footprints. I mean, it's huge. K-Town, it looks just like what people describe, a linebacker in a fur coat. I mean, it's huge, broad shoulders, tall, massive, doesn't even pay attention to him. He just keeps walking. Paul Freeman took a lot of heat for this, as many witnesses do. He was fired from the Forest Service over his interest in Bigfoot. And this is one thing that really bothers me, is that our government is not doing a good job of managing this topic, because they fire rangers who talk about this, Forest Service workers. They are told in no uncertain terms that you'll lose your job if you go public with your sighting. We don't talk about this in the Forest Service. We don't scare people at the Park Service. So they basically tell them to shut up. So there's a lot more witnesses out there who've worked for the government, you know, in natural areas, parks, national forests, who've had these sightings. I've listened to the interviews. They would love to talk about it. And the policy is just, let's pretend it doesn't exist. Just like UFOs. If you're wondering why someone like me is interested in both topics, you know, as a sociologist, I'm interested in why we don't talk about things that are happening. And this two good examples, Bigfoot and UFOs, there is this policy of disinformation and ridicule. And harassment of witnesses and intimidation. And I just think that's wrong for all of us to be putting our tax dollars into some entity that's doing this when we could be learning. This is important science for us to understand these creatures, who they are, where they're from, and possibly to have better relations with them. I have a petition on change.org, if anyone wants to sign it, change.org/protect Bigfoot. It's just to recognize that they exist and stop playing these games. And here's the evidence. There are government documents from the Forest Service, reporting forms, all sorts of documentation about Bigfoot here and there in the National Forest Service, Army Corps of Engineers, where they have written pages about this. So they must know it's real, or they wouldn't be asking people for sightings to file away in some secret vault.
Okay, so that reminds me, then I'm going to go back to Bigfoot real quick.
Sure.
What's your thoughts on why the government right now is wanting to hold all the congressional hearings and things like that? Is that a sincere effort to find out what's happening and do something, or is this to find out what people know and then how the public react?
Very shrewd. That is very shrewd of you. It's both. It is absolutely both. This is serious topic. We've been pushing this topic away, and the government is not one monolithic entity. There's a lot of different branches of government, organizations, with them all competing with each other for for our tax dollars and funding and prestige and all this stuff. Yeah. So some of the congressmen, our senators and congresspeople are really livid that they haven't been told the truth. They've been getting briefed. I am personally told by someone from the UAP task force, they've been getting briefed. Congress has had briefings since 2017, since that New York Times article came out, December 2017. Congress has been getting classified briefings now for 7 years. And some of them know that the aspects of our government that know more about this, Department of Defense, intelligence agencies, aren't telling them anything. And you're absolutely right. The other side of it is this ARRO organization, All Domain Anomalies, a research organization within the Pentagon. Just like you're saying, a lot of people suspect it's not a real sincere effort to find witnesses. If you listen to the witnesses that have testified to ARRO, that they don't think it's a very serious thing. It's maybe more of an attempt to find out what witnesses know. Maybe how much is leaking out from these special access programs that shouldn't be leaking. But there is a sincere effort on parts of our government and people who've worked for the Department of Defense to bring this to the public. So we not saying anyone has all the answers, but at least we could start an intelligent discussion and reduce the fear factor. And I think increased our knowledge of science and the universe. I mean, it's a big story. It's just like Bigfoot. If there's other life forms, which now it's not being called NHI, K-Town. No, NHI. Non-human intelligence. That's the new name for ETs. NHI. That's Bigfoot. That's ETs. The big surprise for all of us, I think, in our lifetimes coming up over the next couple of years, there's other intelligent, even superior intelligence to our own life forms around us right now. They're right here. And we've never been told about them. And people experience them.
Yeah. I agree. And okay, I have a couple more questions. Let's get back to Bigfoot. Let me ask you this, Simeon, you have sightings of these creatures all yeah. over the world. Any government, you know, is putting forth some money and serious effort into finding out if they're having reports of this creature, trying to find out what it is, where it is, things like that?
I would suspect that some of our government agencies that deal with these, natural areas, national parks, since that's where people encounter them a lot, you know, a lot of the sightings are from there, but they could be anywhere, but there have to be studies of this. There's this famous story of one of a Bigfoot that was captured and taken to Lawrence Livermore Labs, of all places, where the remote viewing project was.
Where is that at?
Near Palo Alto, California, and just in that area. And apparently, I talked to someone about this story again. I can't verify it, but apparently the Bigfoot went invisible and all their food started disappearing in the lab. It got out, turned invisible, escaped. For a while, all of their food was disappearing around the lab, and then it left in its invisible form or stealth form. This is why I connected into ball lightning, and we can talk about this in further interviews. It's related to condensed matter physics and other types of physics that we know about called coherent matter that has the ability to cloak and create invisibility and teleportation, very cool stuff. And the Bigfoot seem to be able to do this. So that's why I think there's some important science behind it. And that might be a reason why they're not talking about it, because we're talking about invisibility, anti-gravity, some life form that already has to do this, which, as you can imagine, that has a lot of military applications, right? And they may have classified it because they don't want Bigfoot's abilities to be known by our adversaries. So if they're studying this, and I would have to imagine they are, but it's in some special access program somewhere, they're probably very interested in how a life form could do this, like octopus do this and cuttlefish and things like this. They can blend into their background. And those, we know some of the biology behind this, but the way Bigfoot and other cryptids, other types of creatures do this, it's even something way beyond just chromophores and biological chemicals and things that are transparent to light. We're talking about something that can teleport. And that, I would imagine our military would say, look, we're not releasing to this public. The implications are too important for our national security. Keep in mind that OSAP program that was out at Skinwalker Ranch, right, with Bob Bigelow and friends out there in 15 years ago. That was started out as a UFO program, became focused on cryptids, Bigfoot, and Dogman, this sort of werewolf-like creature, which no one is certain what it is, if it's a type of Bigfoot or something else. That's what they started encountering out there. So that's how these topics are related. And that program was, you know, I don't know if it was classified, but it was pretty well hidden from the public. The OSAP later became called ATIP, right? We're just still finding out about it now. There, you know, I don't know if you heard about this Kona Blue classified program that was supposed to be funded by DHS, Department of Homeland Security, from the same people in OSAP. It wasn't funded, but there's the proposal is online. It was declassified a couple of weeks ago. And you can see all these study programs related to non-ordinary life forms, NHI. So to go back to your question a few minutes ago, if they're not programs, people proposed them. You can see it in the Kona Blue proposal. Sure, to study
these. That's online somewhere.
It is online. Look up Kona Blue. You'll see a declassified DHS document. And it has a remote viewing component to it. It wasn't funded, but they were talking about a remote viewing unit and medical effects of being around creatures like this and UFOs. You know, so they had a pretty broad view, which I think is the right thing here. There is a correlation between Bigfoot and UFO sightings. Go figure. It's about the physics. It's about multiverses. It's a big topic.
I'm going to make a really quick comment about that. We talked about Linda Moulton Howe, but some scientists approached her and told her there was some kind of device that they had to put at a location in Arizona because whomever he was working for, whatever program he was working in, they observed some kind of creatures or something going in and out of our reality because there was a split somewhere and they was trying to keep it closed up. Okay. So they observed whatever going in and out. This device, he said, had to stay there because if it didn't, these things will continue to go in and out of our reality.
Right. I think you might be talking about the Bradford Ranch.
Yeah. There you go.
I know there's a movie coming out about it because I was part of it when they filmed it. I saw a screening of it at Phenomicon in Vernal last year.
When is that coming out?
I believe right around now. I'll email you and let you know. It's about the Bradford Ranch, and they had me in there, and they show some of this type of activity going on there. Yeah. So my view, even though I might not have believed in this, you know, when I was teaching statistics decades ago, this is real. These things can come in and out of our reality. I mean, you and I don't exactly know how to do that at will. I don't, but they can do this. They can show up, and then they can be gone if they want to. And that is something, that's what OSAP was about, later known as ATIP, to figure out what this was. And of course, our government wanted to, you know, tap some of the military applications of this. The public doesn't know that this is real, but it is, because it comes out of our own government's, you know, classified programs. They were, you know, years of research went into this. At Skinwalker.
Really interesting. Skinwalker is truly interesting.
James Lukatsky worked for DIA. He wrote this whole book, Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. He talks all about it. And he talks about the ostracism, why the other intelligence agencies never wanted to fund these things. Because they said to him, oh, that would affect our reputation in the government. Can you believe it? We don't want anything to do with it because, you know, we have to think about how we appear to the other agencies. Like, okay, yeah, we're never going to make any progress if everyone has that attitude.
Yeah, they don't want the stigma on them.
Exactly.
Exactly. That is crazy. My last question is, do you think that maybe, you know, I like learning about different cave systems and things like that. I know the United States has tons of them. A lot of them go unexplored. But you think that these, you know, these creatures could be using a cave system to move around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. You read these cases and people have cases of sightings of other types of creatures in and around cave systems and so forth. Yeah. The Earth is a big place, and yeah, we have underground areas and access to those. Yeah, I would imagine these types of life forms to get away from people have inhabited some of these harder, you know, more remote, harder to reach areas. Yeah.
Very cool. I love talking to you, and I'm glad to have you back on the show. Simeon, why don't you tell them where they can find out more information about you?
Oh, sure. Feel free to go. Thanks. You can go to my blog, newcrystalmind.com. I'm happy to send people signed copies of my books from New Crystal Mind. you can find out about my remote viewing classes and what I'm up to. I have a YouTube channel too. And it's all linked from New Crystal Mind. So thanks for asking.
All right. Simeon, it's been a pleasure. His book, Dark Matter Monsters, there you go. Cryptids, Ball Lightning, and the Science of Secret Life Forms. It is available on Amazon. Simeon, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Thanks. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.